and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 406. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Glenn Fox.
Hello.
And Emily Soden.
Hi.
Guys, you speak to a brand new, all improved James. I leveled up about 15 minutes ago when I poured my herbal tea very slowly and carefully with one hand while simultaneously defeating a boss in Danmarco 3 in the other.
That's pretty badass.
That is very impressive, to be fair.
I was standing there, activities in each palm, thinking, God, if only Abraham Lincoln could see me now.
Did you feel really proud of yourself, like a little bit inside, being like nodding slowly as you were doing both, being like, yeah, I'm the man?
Well, yeah, those meme sunglasses, they just flew down out of nowhere and landed on my head and everything freeze framed and a bit of GTA played. It was amazing. Yeah. It was also really stupid. Don't do that, anybody. It was, even as I was doing it, I was aware this was a dumb idea, but it was on the boss and I really wanted to win and also see if I could do it. And it was a gamble that paid off, and I've now got loads of XP.
Yeah, so. Hey man, life is all about taking risks.
It is.
You could say that you bossed it, James.
I could, but sorry. I want people to continue talking to me.
fair.
And at least feigning respect. Which is the best most of us can hope for.
It's true.
The nuclear holocaust between the US and North Korea.
Yeah.
What was that? Sorry, what?
No, it's good. I actually just read that apparently there's a US ship that went into the China Sea or something.
Read about that,
like,
yeah.
Floating around, sort of mocking China currently. I'm like, oh, come on.
And with reality like this, they wonder why we play video games. Well, if you are worried about the potential nuclear Armageddon just looming over the horizon because everybody who has a button for one of these things is a nutbag, we've got some good news for you. There's lots and lots of exciting games that came out this week. We've got the imminent release of Darkest Dungeon. We've got a mad Game Boy emulating case-having weird peripheral thing, which is definitely going to take off not at all. And a bunch of new releases, including the likes of Titanfall Assault, Cat Quest, and Stand By, which is a game and not an imperative. Plus, we talked to the guys behind the Iron Maiden mobile game about how you make a mobile game about music that doesn't actually involve playing any music. First, the news. Sonic fans, the agony is nearly over. And then a whole different agony will begin when you play the game and it's not as good as you think it's going to be. Sonic Mania has just got a lovely new animated trailer. It's kind of the intro sequence, I believe, of the actual game. And it's all done like one of them nice Sonic cartoons, only even swisher. I watched it. I'm sure you both watched it as well. I'm sure you did, Em.
I did.
And you go, ah, Sonic. I like Sonic. Sonic's cool. It sounds a bit like Sonic. Looks a bit like Sonic. I hope it plays like... Oh, no, they've ruined it.
Well, I really hope that they don't, but I just have been burned so many times before.
I don't want to be mean, but has Sonic ever been good?
There we go. There we have it. And I'm the Sega man. I'm the guy who had the Mega Drive and grew up with Sonic and loved Sonic. And then you go back to the games, and I don't think Sonic stands up that well when you look back.
No.
I think it's become a bit more common to bash Sonic, and I don't want to be part of the cool let's rag on Sonic crowd, but you can go back to, well, for me it's not even going back, I can play Mario games like now, like go back and play the original Mario, Super Mario Bros. And stuff like that, and you can see the design philosophy and you go, ooh, these are actually very good. Less so with Sonic, I think. The levels seem very all over the place.
It seems like the design of the level seems to go against the design of the game. Like you're encouraged to go fast, but I feel like you get punished for it because you miss loads of stuff.
To be fair, I will admit, like I defend the old school Mega Drive games to the death, but I played Sonic 2 recently, I think, on the Mega Drive, and I did notice that when I literally could not find my way to the end of a level. Sorry, my throat is...
It's alright, you sound all hoarse and, you know, late night phone liney.
I didn't realise how bad the level design was until I played it recently, so I'm kind of... I don't know. I want it to be good, but I know it won't be.
Well, it might be. I mean, I don't really, what is the actual like manifesto with this game? Is it just kind of a remake of the original by a guy who actually knows
one
Sonic?
To three.
It's trying to be Sonic 4, from what I can tell, like the real Sonic 4, not the Sonic 4's Act 1, 2, and 3 that came out on mobile and were sort of 2.5D and everything. The idea is it's Christian Whitehead, who did the ports. We've talked about them in the past, and then Sega was like, you're really good at this, doing like emulated versions. Can you just do it? You seem to get Sonic and no one else does. And they got him in, and he's been creative directing this game. And the manifesto seems to be just like, hey, remember Sonic 1, 2, and 3 when you like Sonic? Here's the next one. Here's the next spiritual successor to those original games. And from everything that I've spoken to people who've played it at E3, who are cautiously optimistic, who like Sonic and think, yep, it feels like Sonic. You can see from all the gameplay that it really does, you know, look and feel, or look like it, certainly. Don't know how it feels. And so in that sense, great. And I am optimistic that it will be the closest thing to a true Sonic experience that we all get. But there is that part of me that's, like I say, I've gone back and played the games and gone, maybe these aren't, you know, I'm not sure. These were amazing games. Beyond the music, which was phenomenal, and the design and the look and everything, and the sound effects, like the whole world of Sonic is great. I think when you just strip it back and just isolate the level design aspect of it, it's like, I'm not quite sure how compelling these are. But not everything ends up surviving when you take off the old rose-tinted nostalgia specs. And that's okay, and it has a huge fan base still. I'm sure people will still love it and probably hate us for suggesting it's anything but amazing.
True.
But you'll be able to find out on the 15th. So we're talking 4 days? 4 days? Tuesday. Tuesday is going to be out. We can all judge for ourselves on all the platforms and Switch, and as well as the home consoles. So we're very much looking forward to seeing how it turns out. Something else that should work very, very well on mobile as well as other platforms, Darkest Dungeon, which has been out on PC for a bit and is heading to iPad this month, 24th of August, it's going to be arriving. If you follow the game at all, you'll know that it's a side-scrolling dungeon crawler which places the emphasis on terrible things, awful things happening to you all the time and making you mad.
I don't know why. Every single Steam summer sale that came around, or autumn or winter sale, I'd always see Darkest Dungeon on sale, and I was like, do you know what? I really want it, but at the same time, I want to wait for mobile. Because I feel like it would work really well as a mobile game.
Yes, I was similar, because I don't play many PC games, I was had a similar thing with FTL. I was so glad when it came to iPad and thought, like, this is going to work so well on a touchscreen, going boop, 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 like I'm on Star Trek TNG. And lo, it was awesome. And this is similar as well, because it's not really a twitchy, fast, clicky game or anything. It's about sort of tactical combat and based around a sanity system, which I'm always interested to see, being a bit of a Cthulhu fan. And it's got that roguelike, everybody dies and you go back to the beginning because you suck, and nasty creatures and really lovely. I suggest you look at it, if nothing else, because it's got this incredible, almost comic book aesthetic to it, where it's all very grey and brown and grimy, but the art's beautiful and animation's lovely, and it just, yeah. If you were in any way worried or in doubtful, it's going to be a premium game, so it'll still cost you proper money, and it's not going to have any IAPs or anything like that, as far as we know. But August 24th, look out for that. Now, something that popped up in our feeds, which jangled a few old brain cells, was the Hyperkin Smart Boy.
And you
put a story up about it, Em, and I was like, this, again, I thought this came out like 2 years ago.
I felt like I should continue it. It's like almost becoming this running thing now, because Mark covered it back in 2015, I think, and then Clement covered it last year, just actually the day I started as the new news editor, you know, as trainee news editor, as it were. So when I saw the Smart Boy thing come out, I sort of researched on Pocket Gamer. I was like, oh.
Well, the object itself, I understand the desire for it or the hype about it, but it's just, I thought, I can't believe this has been like 2 years down the line. I thought this had been made and released and was done with already. But no, in case you don't know what we're talking about, the Hyperkin Smart Boy is a case come emulation controller built for Android phones, which makes your phone look a bit like a Game Boy. So imagine you took a Game Boy, you buzzsawed it in half, just below the screen, and then you hollowed out the bottom bit so you could stick a phone in. So it covers up half the phone screen. Your phone, the top half of it, then becomes the screen for the thing, and then you play games using the real Game Boy buttons that you'd see on a Game Boy. they've copied the design very closely. Apparently it's fine. Don't know what the loophole is here, but they get away with it. It was a Kickstarter thing that obviously took off because people went, I remember those! Give them to me. Like they always do with these old emulation-type devices. And now, finally, in the year of our Lord, 2017, it's going to start shipping on August the 21st. It's going to cost you £59.99. And this is so niche, you guys.
I can hear that in your voice just then. You're like, and...
Well, thing is, right, like retro controllers, I'm a big fan, I'm all for them. People who use their emulators, I assume that you own all of the 1600 ROMs you've downloaded and it's legal. If you're in that situation and you can legally use these ROMs, of course. But with this one, you're really limiting yourself to only being able to play Game Boy games.
Mm.
Can you play Game Boy Advance games or is it just original
Game Boy? Game Boy, I think, isn't it? And Game Boy Color.
It is... just the Game Boy control, so it's a D-pad, 8-way directional D-pad, and an A and a B button, you know, and start and select. So anything that, like a Game Boy Advance game, you've got shoulder buttons, haven't you?
Mm.
A SNES game, you've got four face buttons and shoulder buttons, and anything above and beyond that, the buttons increase and increase and increase. So you really are limited to only being able to play Game Boy games and NES games, I guess. Anything with an A and a B, and that's it. So... it strikes me that it's quite a lot of money to be able to just access a very, very narrow catalogue of old games. Whereas if you buy a Steel series or something, you can play Game Boy games or any game, really, because it's got enough buttons to deal with them all.
Yeah. I thought it actually had a cartridge slot as well.
Yeah, no, it does, but it only like accepts the Game Boy and Game Boy Color cartridges, which are a different shape than Advance.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
That's kind of annoying.
That's good, though. That's neat that it works with the things, but I guess this is super fans only need apply, I suppose. What I would have imagined is they'd have stealthed some shoulder buttons onto the back or something, just some really quiet ones, just to sneak them in there just in case people want to use it with other things, other emulation devices. But no, it's just that. So
yeah, it is expensive for what they're asking for, to be fair.
Hmm.
Like, you know, £60 isn't money you can sneeze on.
No. And no, you can't. It's 21st of August is when it's going to start appearing in people's post boxes and that. You can also find links to the site and whatnot on Pocket Gamer if you fancy your own. So, you know, if you're a smart boy, go and get a smart boy.
Ho-ho! Goodbye.
So sorry. Iron Maiden Legacy of the Beast came out last year and was something slightly different as far as music games go, focusing more on RPG-style combat than doing actual mad fretting. Lexi Leon, who is the Interactive Creative Director at Phantom Music Management, is here today to talk about stuff relating to that game and comics and other extended bits. You've got a lot going on, haven't you, Lexi? Welcome.
Yes, hi, James. Yeah, we've got loads going on with Legacy of the Beast, the ever-expanding Maiden universe, and, you know, excited to talk about it.
So, like, when they released Guitar Hero, I'm thinking specifically of that, like, Metallica update where they're going to go, right, we'll focus on a particular band, we're going to get what we can out of their music, we're going to appeal to the fans, hopefully bring new ones in. That seems like kind of an obvious choice, using a music game as an avenue to push music. The Legacy of the Beast game is more akin to those sort of, I guess the Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, those kind of 3 or 4 person battlers, which are half card, half RPG. Why did you choose that to explore the Iron Maiden universe?
Right, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, whether it's Metallica or any other band, you know, and certainly there are parallels between acts like Metallica and Iron Maiden, but Iron Maiden does sort of stand out on its own in a unique capacity because of Eddie and the consistency of Eddie across, you know, 16 studio albums, and then there's the live albums, and then there's the singles and the B-sides and the tour posters and the T-shirts and so many variations of this singular character throughout their career. Places and times that he has been to and traveled through. And so you have this incredible mythology, or certainly what I felt was an implied mythology of this character, Eddie, and his sort of eternal conflict with the Beast that was, you know, as far as I could tell, his nemesis. This has been going on now for decades, and I don't think there's any other band that has that consistency of character-based narrative implied across their whole catalogue.
Well, it's unusual outside the context of something like, you immediately think of Bowie in terms of portraying different characters along a period of time, or maybe prog rock when it comes to doing concept albums that are based around themes or characters or something.
Right, yeah.
When it comes to getting a game out there on mobile and embracing like a new audience of people, like, was there a concern that either old fans who've been around since the very beginning might be like, have no interest in this kind of game, or that perhaps younger fans who maybe hadn't encountered Maiden before would be like, what is this?
Yeah, no, I mean, ultimately, you know, these are all questions that we asked ourselves. And I think, you know, this kind of touches on the previous question and this question now is, you know, okay, tactical turn-based role-playing action RPG.
There we go.
As a genre, you know, it amalgamates a lot of things. And that, again, ties into Maiden, which is a lot of things. You know, it is a bit proggy, it is a bit thrashy, it can even be a bit punky. There is a lot of historical and literature references in the lyrics, as well as more fantastical stuff. These kinds of games where you've got loads and loads of characters and loads of settings, and you're traveling through worlds and collecting characters and battling characters and so on, it sort of made a lot of sense because there's a lot of military references and battle references in Iron Maiden. Mm. You want that action element. You also want that reference to the literature and the history that's informed the songs. And that's the fun thing about going through the worlds and getting all the references and the nods in there and building out a universe that actually has some substance. You know, do some of these kids playing Destiny or whatever not know about Iron Maiden? Do some of our older fans not care about mobile games? I mean, ultimately, our decision to come back into gaming with mobile was very intentional. And it was like, you know what? We've got millions of fans all around the world. We always see that reflected at the shows. It's a very broad demo. And the other thing about that is it's a very global demo. You know, we've got people in South America, for example, huge numbers of fans in South America, where video games consoles have to be imported. They're hugely expensive.
Mm.
And a single game could be like $100,
yeah,
to buy a game for your PlayStation.
Funny enough, my partner comes from Colombia. So in Bogota, right, when I was over there, I went and had a look at the price of like just buying a PS4 or something like that. And yeah, it's the equivalent of about £700-800.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. It's about $1,000. So, you know, we were thinking, hang on, we can't just go and make a console game that only a specific sect of our fans are going to be able to enjoy. So we felt... And this is another reason that it was a free-to-play game. You know, ultimately, that decision was not a financial decision as such, as it was we want to make sure that every single Iron Maiden fan has an opportunity to play this game. Because we're going to spend years making it. We're going to get it right. We spent a year just figuring out what it would be, you know, and right, the form it would take and all of this, you know. So long before we even began development, we'd already spent a year on it. And so the best route to market, if you will, is free to play on mobile, because almost everyone has a mobile phone. And as we say, even, you know, down in South America, huge numbers of Android users down there. So, you know, that made a lot of sense in terms of let's get it out to all the fans and everyone can experience it, you know, at whatever level they want, whether they're paying or not.
So when it comes to the working through the music itself, for example, the choices of the types of songs you're going to include and the way that you're going to include them, I mean, you've got a background in professional music yourself. You're a guitarist. So I imagine there must have been some involvement on your part. How did you work out, like, are we just going to loop songs in the background, or are we going to try and build them into an orchestral score, or like what?
Yeah, I mean, again, that was something that was discussed. You know, should we embellish the stuff? Should we add orchestra? Should we try and, you know, create an original soundtrack? And ultimately, we felt, well, you know, it's so rooted in the music that what we really need to do is go back to basics, if you will, and look at the song structure. Go back to the master tapes. We strip back the lyrics because, you know, we don't want it just to sound like there's a, you know, radio playing in the background while you're playing a game. It's got to sound like production music. It's got to be a soundtrack that's going on, that's reinforcing the game and adding energy to the game, but not overbearing.
Yeah,
you know, you
yeah.
still need your crash bang wallops to be up in the forefront of an action game. So there's lots of Foley and sound effects on top. But yeah, we went back into the songs. And we were looking, oh, this, you know, this is a great 8-bar riff. You know, this is really driving stuff, and you can really listen to that for a while and get pumped, you know. And so we would look at different songs that matched up with the themes of the worlds we were building. For example, the Kingdom of the Sands area in the game is mostly inspired by the album Power Slave, which is all set, obviously, in ancient Egypt with the pyramids and all of that. But there's a particular track that's from a later record from Brave New World, actually, and that track is called The Nomad. and that's also set in the desert. It's about this wandering desert nomad and all the myth and legend surrounding him. We wanted that character to be represented in the game, the nomad. And then we would use them to basically create a real-time audio engine where, depending how far you were into the battle and how you were faring in battle, and the battles are in waves, as they often are in these games, so you go into a level and it's five waves of enemies that you have to defeat, you know, we would up the ante on the music and switch up the riffs and so on, building up to, you know, wave five, which would be the biggest challenge. And that really added, you know, a sense of authenticity to the game, because obviously it really was all from the Master Maiden recordings, but, you know, also differentiated it from just putting on a Maiden CD in the background. It was a unique experience and a unique use of the music.
Now, the reason you've popped up on radar again after the game's release last year is because you're sort of expanding your horizons somewhat and going all transmedia, as it's called now. So in addition to Legacy of the Beast, you're also releasing a comic, right, that's sort of inspired or tied into that universe.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing all sorts of things with Legacy of the Beast, and it's quite exciting for me personally because, you know, I've worked across lots of fields. Like I said, I've worked in music, I've worked in comics, I've worked in animation, and so... It's a mobile game, so you can only really tell the story through, like, the odd text bubble here and there, you know, speech bubble that pops up, or, you know, it's kind of like Zelda or whatever, where, you know, the whenever Eddie doesn't speak, so Eddie's more like Link, where it's just like dot, 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 you know, and you can't really get into sort of the real meat of the story and give all these cool supporting characters we've created, you know, the time that they deserve. And so the idea to do a graphic novel came up of, like, well, why don't we take, you know, all of this work we've done in developing the narrative and just tell the story in another medium where we're really just focused on the story separate to the game. It's the story of the game. Certainly the first four worlds in the game are kind of like the first arc of Legacy of the Beast. And so we thought, okay, well, we'll take the treatment for that first arc and we'll adapt it into a graphic novel. Issue one of that is coming out in October. We're working with Heavy Metal, the fantasy magazine, are actually publishing that as a comic book separate to their mag.
We are seeing much more of this transmedia across, well, I guess, properties now. It's the thing you describe, everything as a property or an IP rather than a game.
Intellectual property.
Because suddenly everything is like, well, it's not just about the game. It's about the game, and it's about the comic and the TV show and the cartoon series and the mug and all of that that comes with it. Famously, recently, we've had a bit of problems with people objecting to stuff like you need specific amiibo to unlock special features and stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah, sure.
All that kind of gated premium content. What is your take on all that? Having had to deal with, like, we're going to turn a game into another type of property, how do you sidestep those kind of issues where it starts to really be almost like anti-consumer?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, again, that's... You know, what you've got there is this kind of two schools of thinking, I guess, and you know, most people will fall somewhere between, and then there's kind of extremes either end. And you know, my school of thinking is, you know, if you love a property, you're going to, or a story or a character or whatever it may be, you know, you're going to be excited to be able to experience that character in different formats. Certainly growing up, I was a big fan of, like, for example, the Ninja Turtles cartoon. I love that, you know, Saturday morning TV experience. And then, you know, I remember having the game, you know, on the NES and it being awesome because I love those characters and it was a lot of fun to be able to kind of control them on the screen and all that. And obviously that's going way back and sounding like a dinosaur. But, you know, we're in a much more kind of fast paced age now where too much of a good thing, I think, is what you want to avoid, where I'm very excited about the comic book. I think it's a really stellar production. Again, a lot of love's gone into it. All the people that worked on it are big Maiden fans. You can see from the artwork, you know, the interior pages are all gorgeous. They're all up to the same standard of the cover. And that's, I think, how it needs to be. Anything you're going to do, you have to do it for the love of the medium, with people who love the medium and love the source material, and create something that in its own right is a wonderful product. If I want a coffee mug, I'll buy a coffee mug. If I want a figure, I'll buy a figure. I don't want to be told that I can only get this content in this game that I've already paid money for if I go out and buy this thing. There's a difference between an incentive, which is, you know, some kind of digital content offering that perhaps, you know, is just bonus. Let's say we put something out in the comic that would be a scratch away code saying, oh, you know, by the way, if you read the comic and you're into that, we're also, you know, going to thank the gamers out there that have gone over to check out the comic by giving them a code to get some Ironite in the game or some kind of cool thing, you know. That's a separate thing to saying you can only get this character or this skin or this weapon if you buy this thing. So it's like, are you rewarding people? Are you incentivizing people in a kind of fun and engaging way? Or are you trying to exploit people and get more money out of them? And if that's what you're doing, like, you know, best of luck to you, but it's not something I'm interested in doing.
Sure. And we asked this to most people who are on the podcast, but what kind of games are you playing at the minute? Do you feel playing mobile games? What's on your home screen?
I think it was DC Legends I was playing quite a bit of, and I was really impressed just with the quality of art production, and, you know, a lot of the interstitials and things like that, which normally you don't really pay any attention to. They were just like gorgeous, full screen, beautiful rendered paintings of all the characters that would kind of pop up.
Mm.
And it just, you know, made the game feel like a really kind of exciting, visually beautiful place to be in, even when you weren't playing.
Yeah.
You know, which is something that I've kind of taken on and say, oh, you know, we could do a bit of that. Let's get some awesome paintings of Eddie going on, you know. I don't really have time anymore, sadly, which is, you know, for console stuff, despite having all the console platforms. I managed to get about, I think, 30 hours into Zelda, into Breath of the Wild on the Switch, which is just glorious. Wonderful, wonderful production and just a beautifully executed game. But I mean, you know, you kind of get to a point where it's like, well, that's about all the time I had for this game, and I'm, you know, 8% in. You know,
that's the open world curse. Suddenly, yeah, you look at the look at the map and zoom out and go, oh god, I had no idea.
You know, and I went and, I mean, this is kind of sad, but I basically have like every single version of Street Fighter 2 ever. Just because it's the greatest. So I got that for the Switch as well and was just bashing that out a bit the other day.
What's the name of the comic? Is it called Legacy of the Beast as well, or has it been revealed
yet?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. It is Iron Maiden Legacy of the Beast. It's just a comic now.
Okay, fair enough.
It's already in the Heavy Metal magazine as a preview, and the actual standalone comic book is coming, and that won't be in the mag. It's just published as a comic book. It'll be in all comic book stores, and that comes out in October.
Out and about this week, Titanfall has happened on mobile, much to the approval of some of the people on our staff, and probably the chagrin of people who are going, what, this isn't a first-person shooter, what the hell is this, mobile games, rubbish, blah, blah, and so on. I played this when it was in soft launch about 4 or 5 months ago or something, well old it is. It's finally arrived on iPad and Android and iPhone and everything. Now, I've played the newer version. You've played it a little bit, Glenn.
Yes, I like it.
You do like it.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of Clash Royale until I got too angry about it, so I stopped playing. But yeah, I've been playing Titanfall Assault, and it's nice. It's doing something a little bit different, which is nice to see, because I've seen loads of Clash Royale clones now that are just literally clones.
Mm. It feels a bit more MOBA-y.
Yeah. I think that's, I guess, fair.
Well, it's got a bit more going on in it. It's complicated things slightly, which some people might not approve if they like the very streamlined simplicity of Clash Royale. But if you've not played it and seen it yet, it follows the same idea of you are gradually launching troops via energy that's charging up at the bottom of the screen. They have to go and take over nodes in this case rather than destroying towers. And then get to the end, and instead of there being a king character in his tower, there's just a big machine with guns on it, and you have to blow it up, and if you blow that up, you win. The way it's confused things is that the playing field is not this rectangle. It's more like a maze. It's got a little kind of twisty pathway. And along that way, there are three nodes, at least initially, A, B, C. And the idea is you have to capture those nodes. So it's got more of this kind of like hold King of the Hill sort of thing. You've got to try and own all three nodes, capture all three, and the enemy are climbing up on you and trying to rob it from you. Likewise, if you capture C and then you send all your troops all over to B, you're leaving C undefended, which is bad, so you have to start using things like burn cards, which allow you to drop massive machine gun turrets or something and set them up to defend your nodes once they've been captured. You end up with Titans, of course, so Titanfall happens, and you can drop Titan cards, and then they stomp around the place, blowing the crap out of everything. Your opinion's more interesting to me, because you are an actual Clash Royale proper fan.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the closest comparison to this. And as you say, there have been lots of Clash Royale straight-up clones.
Yes, yeah.
Where it's almost a reskin.
Like, I'm all for people, like, sorry, developers being inspired by games. as long as it literally doesn't just turn into them cloning a game. You know, I like the fact that people take inspiration from stuff and go down their own route. And this is sort of what Titanfall's done. It's put a sort of Titanfall spin on it. So it's took the genre. It's taken that Clash Royale ease of just dropping cards down and stuff like that, but it's added sort of mobile elements.
I can understand why fans of the game might be like, why do I care about a Clash Royale-style Titanfall game? But I was sort of quite impressed when I played it the first time. Harry's given it a gold. Harry really, really liked it.
Yeah.
It's actually a bit more... It aims, as he said, it aims mid-core, but slightly to the higher end of it. It is... Whereas Clash Royale is just, you know, keep dropping the troops, they walk forward, that's what they do. This has got a little bit more backtracking in it. So if you are capturing your first node and then you have to, you know, keep advancing down the pathway towards the enemy, there is a lot of like, holy crap, they're capturing the node that's way back near our base. We need to send troops back to deal with that or set up sentries to work on defense and stuff. There's a bit more of a defensive angle to it, rather than just dropping more troops directly behind, you know, in front of them like you do in Clash Royale. I would say give this a look if you're into anything tactical or you like the Clash Royale. It's easy to be put off, I think, by the thought, A, that it's cashing in on something, which it obviously is a bit, or B, that it is just like a straight-up clone. And I think that you're right, it's not a straight-up clone. There's actually a bit more going on here than you might think.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Now, Cat Quests, which I really want to play and haven't been able to because the code's buggered and we can't access it from our joint accounts. Only Harry is the one who's been able to access this.
Yeah.
And it looks all, well, adorable, doesn't it?
Basically, it's Legend of Zelda, isn't it? With cats.
It's a bit Zelda-y, but yeah, felines. Lots and lots and lots of cat puns. Harry's the only one who's been able to play it, so we can't say, but Harry acknowledges you will go, ah, it's a Zelda clone, but he says, actually, it's not really the case. Similar to Titanfall 2, it plays like its own thing. It's pulling inspiration from Zelda, but it's also cribbing stuff from all of RPG history and of paying homage. And yes, it's a bit nostalgic and everything, but it's the right balance of being cute, being actually really polished and well-presented, and managing to have its own personality and its own character. And yeah, I think he was very surprised that it was as good and fun and warm and sort of sweet as it is. I'm looking forward to playing it. We'll definitely do a review as soon as the code starts working on AppSpy. But in the meantime, you can see the PG review. Cat Quest is the name. It's premium, and it's out now. Jumping over to Switch for a moment, Ironcast. This is a game that you've played, Em. What's this about?
Essentially, it's a match 3, but with like roguelike elements.
All right.
So it's surprisingly way better than I thought it was going to be. So you are in this kind of 19th century war-torn Britain, and you have these big 7-foot mechs called Ironcasts. You have different nodes, which means different power-ups for you. So by matching the correct coloured nodes, you then power up your machine and you can use different attacks.
Oh, okay, it's one of those match 3 battlers, like
yeah,
you get.
Yeah, like match 3 battler. But a lot of it is entirely randomised.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no sort of set strategy per match. You kind of have to just hope, like cross your fingers and hope you get the right thing. And it's also permadeath.
It's a weird looking one because it reminds me of a mixture of the Fallout and BioShock aesthetic. The UI has got a very BioShocky look to it.
Oh yeah,
steampunk thing. And those mechs look kind of fun, but they're just sat either side of the screen. And in the middle, it's classic match 3 puzzler business.
Yeah, pretty much. You can like choose to walk and put your shields up and stuff. It doesn't advance you towards each other. You feel like you're walking forever, but by walking, you're less of a target, apparently.
Oh, okay.
It's good. There's a lot of strategy in it, as in like loads of different elements, which is why I liked it. Because you know what I'm like anyway with match 3s. I kind of get very bored with them, but because we had to keep on matching things to fill up our little power bars, otherwise we can't attack properly. And,
so it's matching specific colours to charge a particular attack, yeah?
Yeah, yes. But the cool thing is you can also aim at specific things on your opponent's like mech. So you can shoot at the shields and you can shoot at their weapons to try and take him down and stuff, as well as trying to damage their health.
Oh, okay. So like, I was going to say Fallout, like VATS.
Yeah. Yeah, very much.
Okay.
It was surprisingly good. Like, apart from the randomization thing, which did eventually become very grating, because it is luck-based.
That's the curse of the roguelike. Every level's different, but it's always an algorithm's jumbled-up version of something different, which means the same thing, but cut up and rearranged.
Yep.
and sometimes it will just screw you. I was talking to a friend about this last night, because there's so many roguelikes around at the minute, and it does kind of focus you in on pure gameplay. But at the same time, if the dice rolls and you just get to the second screen and it just kills you because of the way the level's been designed, there is something quite fun about that. I quite like the suck it, that's life, deal with it angle of it. But at the same time, you think, well, maybe that's not the best design. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is available for Switch and Switch only at the minute. How much is it? Do you know? Is this an expensive thing?
$12.99.
Okay.
Also, is it on Steam?
Is it on Steam? Oh, okay.
I think it's on Steam. I could swear I saw it on Steam.
Well, you can certainly find it and have a look. Check out the review on PG. Ironcast is the name of it. Standby, which is a game that I played this morning and am quietly impressed with. This is another one that came over from Steam, if indeed Ironcast did, and has arrived on touchscreens. It is one of those incredibly fast, hardcore platformers where you're a tiny little man running around a level, which is essentially a tunnel carved out of black rock. You have the ability to slide, to jump, to shoot, but you have to do certain things on certain types of platform. So you'll be running along and then you'll see a bit of the floor's gone red. That means you have to slide on it. If you don't slide on it, you will be instantly electrocuted and you will die. Then there's a bit on the wall that will be blue. So you hit a blue wall. That means if you jump, it'll fire you across the screen at incredibly high speed, possibly into a bit of red wall where you will die. Then you come across these big blocks of yellow, which you have to shoot through, which you do by pressing the down button, I think, is the shooty button. And if you don't, you might bounce off it, fall down onto the bottom of the cave, which happens to have a red floor, and you will die. And so it goes on and on. It's actually fun. It's really fun. It's properly like left and right control, up and down, and that's it. Up, do your jump. Down, manages the slide and the shooting. It's very, very fast. It's got that Super Meat Boy feel mixed with that sort of almost Cannibal look to it, the minimal nature of the design, of the visual design. And it's hard, and it starts getting challenging at about the sort of fifth or sixth stage. It's quite a slick presentation, because whenever the level ends, a screen flashes up with a few bits of info, but the idea is you just swipe away from it and you kind of carry on. You immediately carry on at the other side of the level and emerge on the left side of the screen. So it's almost like everything's chained together. Mm. And it is one of these ones where you have to make a perfect run through the little level. You can complete the stages in about, you know, like 10 seconds, but you have to do about 25 moves perfectly or you're done for. It's £3.99, $3.99, App Store only at the minute, but I think it's well worth a look. It's pretty slick. Unlike Strike Team Hydra, which is a game that is a lot XCOM, only not as good as the XCOM. So I don't know if anyone's had a go on this yet. I played the preview build last week.
No, can't say I have. Glenn?
I haven't played it, no, but I know of it.
All right, so imagine XCOM, only instead of like four members of your team, you've got like seven or eight, and you have the ability to move the camera around anywhere you like, whereas in XCOM, it's got that four points of the compass thing you can switch around. This just lets you do anything, which initially is like, ooh, freeing, and then immediately afterwards, you're like, oh no, this is a terribly bad idea. I can't see anything that's going on, because that stuff in XCOM where you're crew member walks behind a wall and the wall goes transparent, that doesn't happen. And when you look at it from a zoomed out perspective, when you can see the whole overview of the map, then you think, ah, maybe it's all right. And then you zoom in and you go, oh no, it's not that nice, is it? Everything looks a bit ugly. Problem we've got here, I think, is the UI and the touchscreen controls do not work well together. It's too busy. When you have seven people on screen at once, and they're very small on screen, even when you zoom all the way in, they're not that big. And you're having to do the touch screen, like touch the guy and then want them to move over here. So as soon as you touch a person, the movement appears as a bunch of lit up hexagons. So you can see where they can travel to, much like you can in something like XCOM, where it shows you the blue area. This is where you can run. And then you double tap a bit of the screen and, oh no, you've double tapped it, but there was a troop standing just over the edge of that thing and you've accidentally double tapped the troop. But oh no, they've started firing on an enemy. You didn't want to do that. And now you've moved around to try and see what enemy they were shooting at. But a bit of the UI has popped up and it's covered half the screen, including the enemy you were firing at. So now you can't see what's going on. Oh no. It was a bit like that. And I wasn't hugely impressed. You can see a video of me playing it up on AppSpy. You can get it from the App Store for £5.99. Strike Team Hydra is the name, and you can go and check it out if you like. City Walks.
This is really cool, really cool. It's actually not really like anything I've played before. You have a little character that's made out of food. Like, you start with a pineapple drink thing with straws out of its head and stuff. Mm-hmm. You can choose, like, pizza with legs and hamburgers with legs and little food monsters, right?
Delicious.
You're playing a food monster, and you've got to save food by walking around a level, but it's hard to walk. I'm trying to think. There was a game I thought of, but yeah.
When you say it's hard to walk, are we talking like Octodad, like Iron Bread, like difficult controls? Or?
Yes, exactly. Like, so you can only tap in the game. That's the only control mechanic. You tap to get him to drop his leg on the floor, and then he spins in a circle on that leg, and then you've got to tap again for him to put his other leg on the floor.
Oh, I see.
So you've got, and then, you know, eventually you get into a rhythm where you can get him to move forward, turn, blah, blah, but it never kind of feels 100% comfortable, but that's kind of like the intention of the game.
Yeah.
And it's really, really polished. Like, the levels are gorgeous. Like, I don't know if you've ever played something like that Army Men franchise. Do you know this little Toy Soldiers franchise that you used to play back in the day? The second
one. Not
small
soldiers.
No, they were called Army Men. It was a really, really old franchise where you played as, like, the little green soldier men.
With their legs sort of attached to the same bit of plastic.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So you basically could have played as them. And aesthetically, it kind of reminds me of the second one when you break into the real world and you're running around like kitchens and stuff. Because this game's very much like that. You're running around like kitchens and gyms, loads of various places as a little monster man. A level I've just played a few hours ago was this toaster leaps into the air and starts firing bread at you. Mm-hmm. And you've got to like make sure you dash to like behind cover. And that was quite a nice little touch. And I've noticed that as I've played, like, loads of mechanics like that have been introduced.
I've seen some of this playing out on the trailer. It actually is very cutesy. It's got like a 3D, but very minimal sort of, you know, cell shaded look.
Yes.
But actually it looks, I thought this was going to be scrappy, but it looks quite well produced.
It's very well produced. That's the thing I was surprised about, because I haven't heard of this developer before. They've made a few games on mobile before, but nothing big. And just the level of polish here is incredible. Like, I can really see this as a game that lots of people are going to start copycatting. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot going for it. Like, it's gorgeous. The mechanic itself works beautifully. You do feel out of control, but it's intentional. Like, you never feel like the game is deliberately making things more difficult for you.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, just get so many mechanics are introduced just constantly. Like, you know, you have different missions to complete in each level. And, you know, each time there's something new and interesting to do. Like avoiding a toaster or something chasing you, or, you know, water filling a room really quickly, so you've got to quickly dash somewhere. And
is it a free-to-play thing or a premium one, do you know?
Yeah, it's free-to-play. It seems to only have one, well, it has in-app purchases. I'm hoping there's a way to remove ads, because that's the one thing I find quite frustrating at this point, is you're being bombarded with ads. I'm not a fan of that. Like, I'd happily pay for it.
Okay, I'm going to give this a go. The trailer's certainly sold me. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's gorgeous. Like, I'm really, really enjoying it. I think I'm going to probably write up a review on PG as well. So if anyone wants to hear more, head there later. It's probably there by the time this podcast's up.
Wicked. Silly Walks is the name. And finally, Carmageddon Crashes came out as well, which, if you remember the old franchise, which is, as it sounds, about smashing the crap out of cars, it is now on mobile CSR racing with the racy gear shift at the right moment mechanic mixed with a Burnout-style crash explosion at the end. So you're both racing towards each other is the idea. So you want to shift gears optimally so you get the highest speed at the point of impact. You also get the opportunity to run over pedestrians while you're doing it, while you're racing on the way there, which is nice. And then there's a big old slow motion smashy, and you see whether you have won because you were A, going fast enough, and B, upgraded your car enough, which is obviously part of it. So you need to make sure that your armor is boosted and your speeds, and you got these lovely little, you know, shells you put on the car, and you give it mad Mohican style look made out of metal spikes, and it's all very daft and tongue-in-cheek and over the top. And they have some very rude names for the other teams in the game because they are hashtag edgy. it's free to play. It's actually, you know, it looks and feels fine. And I will not lie that it was slightly more cathartic having that big old explosion at the end of the race. Like, racing towards an impact is slightly more fun than just shifting gears and then, oh, my time was faster, you know? So I can see it appealing to a bunch of people, but I can equally see people who like Carmageddon going, what? In the same way as people who like Titanfall will look at Assault and go, what?
Yes.
But either way, it won't cost you an out. Carmageddon Crashes is the name, out on Android and iOS. Let's call it a day. Thank you all for listening. Like, subscribe, rate, view, other verbs. And if you want to join us again next week, we'll be back with more review business, interviews, and all the usual stuff. You know the formula. Come back for it. It's fun. Thank you for joining us. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.